Blog Talk Radio.
View from Under the Bus. I am your hostess, Pretty Bird. And that was The Words We Cannot Say by our very own Jay Hatter with the musical stylings of Shout Even Shy. And today our program comes to you from a team of voices. And this opportunity is presented by our very own Miss Deborah Lee. She is awesome. And we are a group that you can find on allpoetry.com, the world's largest online poetry site. Just go there. It is free to join up and look up a team of voices, and you will find our little group of wonderful, kind poets, a talented lot of good-hearted people, and that is where you'll be able to look up and read all the poems that we will be presenting this evening. So today, or tonight, because, you know, it's a little late here in Eastern time. From Under the Bus, welcome to the Umbra of My Wings. And it is all about darkness tonight. Tonight, I want the creepy and gruesome. It is late at night here under the bus, and things go bump in the night. So it is all about the darkness, the ghosts, the goblins, all of those general creepy things. They are here for us to feast upon tonight. And our very first guest is Mr. Rackentor. Hello, hello.
Hey. I brought the wrong dog.
Well, you know, any shadow is good. We are good. I'm sure that we will have a little of this and a little of that, and I'm okay with some sideways action. We are all right. And tonight I brought a bunch of creepiness or semi-creepiness. I tend to, when it comes to dark, scary dark, not emotional dark, because I kind of live in that place. So for now, scary dark, I tend to be all psychological thriller. I like mess with my brain, make me think about it, go to a place where there's just enough that my mind takes over, goes crazy, takes its crack, and puts me into a tailspin of, oh, no, because that's the best kind of fear is when you make it up yourself, where there isn't a whole lot to go by, but enough to be familiar, to touch on fear, to touch on things that you know, to touch on everything that gives you those goosebumps. And when that happens, it is just perfection. So when it comes to things that are ghosts and goblins and gory and creepy and monsters and things like that, sometimes less is more. Like, you know, I like that element of surprise. I like thinking that I know but not really knowing, because I am twisted. So I put myself in a place that maybe the movie or the book or whatever doesn't necessarily put me into, but I get there anyway. And so, you know, that kind of amuses me. And we have a caller. Hello, hello, Lady A. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am actually looking forward to some creepiness tonight, because, you know, usually I'm all emotional this and thought process that, and let's delve into the psychological aspect of things. But today, it's darkness. My second favorite thing to talk about, because I absolutely love the creepy factor. I love nighttime. I am much more night than day. I am not a day person. Not a big fan of the heat and the sunlight, which is funny because I live in Florida, you know, literally the sunshine state. I don't know what's wrong with me, but it's the colors of night, the fact that there are blues and purples and grays and silvers and all of these colors that aren't just black. It's almost like a rainbow in and of itself. And so I find it quite beautiful. I like the little hints of, I'm going to call it possibility, even though it's not necessarily good, that's around every corner or in this shadow place. Because if you're in a good mood, like you're perfectly happy, you know, shadows are shadows. They're not that big a deal. But if you're by yourself and it's late, or you just had a creepy conversation or encounter, or you watched a creepy movie or heard a creepy story, and those same shadows are eerie and they make your mind run twisted. And so it's always an adventure, more so at night, because you can't always see. So there's this whole fill-in-the-blank thing that happens with your psyche, which is very, very dependent on mood. So, you know, it's like an adventure every time. So I kind of love that. So what kind of creepiness do you two like? Are you like psychological thrillers like me, where I prefer the mind bending nonsense, or do you like the jump scares or things like that?
Well, I don't like being scared. However, I do like thrillers. Like, there was a movie that I really liked. It's called An Eye for an Eye, with Sally Field and Kiefer Sutherland. And that was a real, like, suspense thriller. That kind of scary is what I like.
See, me too. Where you think you know, but you don't really know, and then you, there's room to fill in your own head. So you're at the edge of your seat, because it's choreographed so well with the music and the possibilities of things that you can't wait to find what happens next, and you want to know, but you don't want to know, but you want to know, but you don't want to know. I love that.
I get mad when I guess it's going to happen.
I don't like satanic stuff or things that are evil. like spiritually evil. I don't like that stuff because to me it's too frightening to deal with. So the real life suspense thrillers are evil, I guess, but not in the spiritual sense. You know what I mean?
Well, that's because, you know, it's understandable that people suck, and that's a very firmly tactile thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of human nature, and an unfortunate part of human nature, but it's something that isn't that unknown, that realm of possibility that leaves so much out there that anything is possible, and that's a freaky place to be in your head. And say hello to Sky.
Hi, Sky.
Hello.
Hello, hello. So we are talking about all things scary and what kind of scary things we like or don't like. And Lady, you were just saying that you don't like spiritually evil things. Now, here's my thing with that. They fall into two categories for me. They're either kind of laughable because they're so, like, overdone and, like, just, like, 1970s campy, you know, that they're just humorous to me, or they're so understated that it's either just enough to make everybody look evil, which is kind of perfectly done for that genre, or because then, you know, you all of a sudden for the next like week or so trust nobody, you barely trust yourself, you don't look anybody in the eye, everybody's got a touch of that in them, because they make it so plausible that it's kind of everywhere, which is kind of freaky. But if you're going to the movies for a lingering sensation of whatever it is, whether it is a romance or this or that, you want to walk away feeling something, that'll get you there, not in the best way possible, but that'll definitely get you there in that lingering feelings of freakiness. So it's the ones that, I guess there's three then, the campy ones, which crack me up, the ones that make everybody, you know, including yourself, kind of really, you second guess everything you do, like, you know, and then the ones that are kind of a mix of both, where if you don't know, it's all possible, and it makes you question a lot. So I can understand where that lingers in awful ways. But I do like a psychological thriller, not necessarily spiritually oriented or not, just where it gets into your head and you fill in the blanks and your mind takes you to all the twisted places and you make the movie just a thousand times worse than it actually is. And like when you go back like 10 years later and watch it, you're like, oh, really? What the heck was I thinking? You know? I kind of love those. So Sky.
You saw Seven?
What?
You saw Seven?
I love Seven. I hate it. That he became Wrath. Hated it. It broke my heart, especially because Brad Pitt and Gwyneth Paltrow were seeing each other at the time, and that pain on his face killed me. And you knew he was going to do it, and he didn't want to, but oh, I hated that he got played that way. Hated it. It broke my heart a little bit, but I still own the movie. And because, you know, you got to love the seven deadly sins, because those are all, you know, very human traits that we all have within us. We all have all these emotions, and to see them played out in such a visceral way, that was not a scary movie to me. It was very much in your head. I think that they did a great job with that movie. And
what was that movie?
Have you guys?
Was it
Seven?
Seven? Is that the movie you're talking about? Seven?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really,
with Morgan Freeman.
Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
It was kind of gross, too.
It was creepy, beyond creepy.
Yeah, I liked the human factor in it. Not the guy, but like the way the old cop was very much, you know, barely moved by it at all. Like he was completely just unaffected. And then the new guy is all eager and whatnot, thinks he knows everything and ends up knowing nothing. And I kind of, they just really played into that really, really well. And I like that whole thing. And we have Hatter on the line. If my phone will pick up, or not my phone, my computer. Can you hear me, Hatter?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Brought some darkness. I need to read and
okay.
run, though. Sort of.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we will be starting with you then. Did you put it
well,
in?
You don't have to start with me. I want to hang for quite a while.
Okay. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And so we are 15 minutes in, so we should get started. We have a good chunk of poems on. We were talking about what kind of creepiness we like to see, either in books or movies or whatnot. And Sky, you haven't answered. And Hatter, if you have a favorite type, like do you like jump scares? Do you like full-on slasher horror flicks? What kind of
Hitchcockian. Hitchcockian. Hitchcock.
Hitchcock.
I'm super afraid of Candyman because I've always been afraid of that. I have to take all the mirrors down in my house, and I refuse to even let the kids say it this day. I don't have no idea why. I guess that movie just scared the hell out of me. But I think for me, the scariest movies like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the American Horror Story, the season with the clown, like real life psychopaths that are, I'm paranoid anyway. So like real life. I almost walked out of theaters on that one. That was too much for me. There was a really graphic scene in there with the camper, and I really almost walked out in the middle of that scene. But yeah, I can't those real life, you know, those are scariest for me. I mean, I watched them. They're okay. The Hills Have Eyes, that scene was a bit too much for me. I did almost walk out. I was like, eh. Yeah. But yeah, definitely like real life stuff that could happen because that's scary and I'm already paranoid.
Oh, I can completely understand that. It's funny. I tend to look for a good, something that will scare me. Cause I haven't seen one in a long time that is actually scary. And I haven't found one. And then, I don't know, years ago already, I saw the preview, the long trailer for Lights Out. And I said, yeah, nope, don't need to watch that one. We're good. And I'm sure that it is all the best parts of the movie and the rest of the movie isn't all that. But it's enough for me to know it's okay. And if you guys haven't seen the trailer or haven't seen the movie, feel free to go to YouTube and look up the Lights Out trailer. That kind of did it for me. And it's the first time, the only time really, that I haven't watched a movie because of that it might be too scary. Not that I think it's going to be too scary, but it was creepy enough that I'm good.
Do you know what movie wasn't scary and I thought was going to be scary? Was The Hostel, when it first came out, they were like, people are passing out and dead, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that
so
was
my
so
friend,
disappointing.
Yeah, so my friend, my godchildren's mother, we were really young, and she was like, we need to go see this movie, they're people are passing out. So there we are, we get in the first front row, the first like 20 minutes is like, I don't know what this is rated, but not a horror film, a different kind of film.
No, there's a whole lot of young and naked.
My friend in my ear, she's like, if they would have put a poker to the eye, that's not what would happen. I'm like, would you shut up?
That's funny. Well, they do that. And they're swiping people this way and that way. It's very graphic and very bloody, but it's not scary. It's just gross. Like, they do this and they do that, and maybe I wasn't in the right mindset. I've seen it twice, the first one. And I was just like, oh, really?
They
could have done the story better than that.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, what about the Exorcist, though?
Okay, I loved The Exorcist. When I saw that, I was real little, and it freaked me out.
You watched
it
for you when you watched that.
Uh-huh.
I went to see it, not knowing what it was about, really. I went with some friends on a stormy night, and I had a picture of Jesus and a rosary in my coat pocket. So, yeah, anybody was going to be struck down, it was going to be me.
Yeah. I was the same way. I saw it when I was probably, 18 or 19, and I slept with a rosary around my neck for like 6 months and left my light on and a Bible under my pillow, and oh, dear.
That was horrible.
Not any other movie affected me quite like The Exorcist did.
Time, place, whatever.
It just did. It freaked me out a little bit.
A few years ago, they advertised for the new one. I couldn't even keep the ad on. I had to turn the channel when the advertisement came up for that. No,
I didn't appreciate the new one. I like the old one better, even with the overdone makeup and all that stuff. But it kind of, there was a crassness to that demon that was not a sign of the times. It came out of nowhere, and that's what I remember most of all when I was 8 years old, when she's like with that cross and, you know, things I can't say on this PG-13 show. And at 8 years old, I was like, because it just added to the vileness of the scene for me. And that, you know, it's funny because The Exorcist didn't freak me out anywhere near as much as Dracula did.
The Omen? Oh.
The Omen, the music was scarier than the movie. When I saw that, I was very, very young. And so I was just like, whatever. The one that got me, to be honest with you, and let's say hi to AP. Hi, AP. We're talking about all kinds of creepy
stuff. Hello.
The movie that got me the most, because I found out before I saw it, and again, I was young because my parents, you know, kept me from the wrong things. Anyway, when I found out that it was, you know, based on a true story, however farly removed that actually is, was the Amityville Horror. That freaked me out. That movie, where there was any truth to whatever poetic license they used. I was really young when I watched that too, single digits. And I was just like, oh, yeah, that freaked me out. So, that. So, does any movies freak you out, AP?
Oh, thanks, but the TV series was the one that started first. In Search Of, with that eerie music and Leonard Nimoy's voice freaked me out every time. Could not even watch the title scene. It was that scary.
What was it, AP?
In Search Of.
I found that to be so interesting. I was like mesmerized by that show.
Ah, it freaked me out. No,
I'm a little twisted, though. It's okay.
Absolutely.
No, I'm done too. Can I read my...
Absolutely. Yes, you may. And Hatter's up on the board.
I posted it.
So whenever you're ready, Hatter.
Hatter's under the
grandma.
Bus.
Called Grandma. Grandma's house, so old and dark, staying there was never fun. Grandma acts strange sometimes. She's fooled everyone. Grandma killed the neighbor's cat. She drowned it in the sink. She raised the sweater from the suds, and she then smiled and gave a wink. I watched her bury a body in back, a stepping stone where it lays. Now there's a flowering pot to mark the unknown grave. While in the garage late at night, my fears are much, much higher. Sounds of saws and body parts returning kindling for the fire. Each day she likes to sharpen things. I watched her hone her axe. She plans to wait till I'm asleep before the bloody attack. I heard my grandma late one night, the neighbor kid she baked, celebrating, lighting candles, then appearing with a cake. Each time I watch my grandma cutting things with her saw, I cannot stop wondering what really happened to Grandpa.
This is awesome. It's funny and true little side note. I was driving on my way home today, and in the middle of nowhere, in this little clearing in the woods, was this rusted out old building with like a padlock and like metal louvers on the windows. I was like, and I told my husband, I said, that's where they chop up the bodies. And he's just like, there's something wrong with you. But But I could absolutely see that. Oh my goodness, that is, well, I'm glad she ain't my grandma, because my goodness, that this was awesome. This was absolutely awesome. Things disappearing. Who knows what happened to Grandpa? How fabulous is that for Darshan?
Yeah.
That is awesome. Raconteur, what do you think of the bloody body parts?
Oh, man, there's always something suspicious about, you know, the old ways. You know, everything isn't all cookies and hugs. You know, there's always a strange smell or you know, what's that stain on the, you know? It's like, you know, what's going on in Grandma's house? Why is everything covered in vinyl? You know, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, that would explain a lot. I like the idea of, you know, that maybe that's what happened to Grant. And you know, the funny thing about it is it could be so innocent, you know. Like you said, you know, you thought she's drowning a cat and she pulls the sweater out of the sink, you know. It's one of those things where imagination is worse than the reality sometimes, but maybe not, you know. And, you know, especially as a kid, I really love the thought of that. This is perfect. I really enjoyed this one, Hatter.
Absolutely.
Thank
and
you.
Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was really creative, and I thought it was a great story, and it was entirely creepy, too. And Hatter, you just, you know, you have a gift for the even writing creepiness. You do it really well with your style, and so I really liked it.
Because I'm a creep.
And now that song is in my head. And AP, your thoughts on Hatter's Grandma Baking Children?
Well, it was clear from with the cat and the smile and the wink that it was a nice and dark grandma poem, and it just the question was, you know, was she sort of Mom the Ripper, or was she sort of just Mom the mad sharp knife scientist? And that question is unanswered.
Well, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I'm thinking it might depend on her mood.
Exactly.
Well, our grandmas were butchers. They were able to dress a deer, a cow, a chicken.
Yeah.
The neighbor's kid.
They had knives as sharp as sharp can be.
Yep.
And when.
Yep. Yep. What did they do?
But then they were little frail things that
all you
remember is them holding an apple pie. You know.
Secret ingredient.
Well, there
Mom
you go.
Never quite make one that tastes the same.
I love that.
The secret's
though,
in the
know.
Lard. The secret's in the lard. Grandma made her own soap.
Oh, my goodness. Then there's that. Nothing like a little tallow. And if we learned anything from Fight Club, the human body fat makes the best soap. And we have Sweetie on the line. Say hello, hello. Sweet.
Hello, sweet.
Can you hear me, sweetness?
Hello.
There you are.
Hey, sorry about that.
You are all right. We are discussing all things. Creepy Hatter read a poem about his grandma chopping people to bits, burying them in the garden, baking them in a cake. It was awesome.
Wow.
And, I know. So he opened us up really, really well. And I know that, dear sweet Sky, you I put me up on the board. I meant to put you up on the board. So, Sky, you picked one, right? I see it.
Yes, and I loaded it into the studio.
I see it. And so I'm putting you up on the
board.
Okay, you loaded it. Okay, what did you... There it is. No, it's not.
I did whatever you did. I tried to copy you, except I wrote 21 instead of 18 because I'm, you know, a little crazy sometimes. But you did this, like, weird 007 slash right there.
I start all the ones from my show with a 00, so it pops it to the top. Where are you? Here you are. Okay, I see you. And Sky is up on the board, and here we go.
Into the Dark by Sky Darkle. There are leaves in the cobwebs, tiny vines curling like yellow hair, reaching. Paper bricks that sweat, edges folding in on themselves like button-down collared shirts. Neatly folding in coffins. Blue mechanic cuffs, grease stains that lick with fire tongues, switchblade teeth, yellowing. And in the distance, there's a rat playing piano, chewing strings and spitting out bones. Sewer wells that mirror lakeside views. Dead bodies in the water, floating up from the dark. Hollow, like a turned up top hat, flooded with whispers. Reach in, I have found what you have lost. A jack in the box, missing springs, and a smile. Jack, who broke his back on the hills of those fading leaves. On the hill that caved in on itself, turned up grass on carnival wheels, weeds spinning, latching the heels of memory and pulling them down. Into the dark. And home.
Well, that was just awesome. That was just awesome. I am so glad you brought this. First of all, from the music to the soft, slow way you read it, to the repeating words like punctuation of desolation. This was awesome. And when you add in the floating dead bodies talking to you, like, yeah, go ahead. I've got what you lost. Come on in. The water is fine. This is awesomeness. I cannot say enough. I'm like giddy. I've got this huge smile on my face. This I'm just saving it right now. This is amazing.
Thank you.
Just amazing, 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 amazing. So, Hatter, what do you think of Sky's darkness? Ooh, the dark sky.
Ooh.
Oh, he just dropped. Okay, so AP, what are your thoughts on the dark sky?
Well, I did love the presentation. I thought real sense of presence, didn't it? The words just sort of appeared and appeared sort of in that sort of creepy sort of order, and they just flowed down the page, particularly with the repetition. And I thought it was really elegantly done.
Thank you, AP.
That it was. And Lady A, what are your thoughts? Are you on mute, Lady A?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. This piece is brilliant, and I think you, I don't know when you read this, but I thought I had heard this one other time. But this was just absolutely brilliantly written and spoken. And it was indeed very, very dark, that creepy kind of darkness that has these words in it that just twist in your heart the wrong way. Tiny vines curling like yellowed nails, reaching and reaching. The whole thing about, you know, you talk about button-down shirts and folding in the coffin and mechanic cuffs and grease stains that lick with fire tongues. Like, you did this whole piece is just so fantastically written. Maybe I dreamed about it, but it seems to me I've heard this before. Did you read it on another show?
I'm not sure. I picked up that one. I might have been on audio for another time, maybe.
Yeah, this is just fabulous, and I agree, too, with what Pretty Bird said about how you read it and the pausing and the quietness of your voice and the and it just creeped you out even more because you did it that way. I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrea.
Absolutely. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
I want to find out who trained the mouse to play the piano, the rat, rather, if he was accomplished or if he took lessons. I mean, that's a brilliant idea, you know, because, you know, they get into everything and, you know, playing the piano could be something as simple as just interpreting, you know, him running across the keys and not actually pounding out a thing. And it doesn't even have to be on the keys. It could be on the innards of it. And, you know, because there's the metal wrapped around the strings, they're going to want to chew on that. And even that could be construed as you know, a creepy thought of, you know, that the mouse chewing on it sounds like I'm playing piano. Or, you know, being sarcastic, telling someone that that's a mouse piano, you know. It's really, and I keep taking away from your image by saying mouse instead of rat. But, yeah, you did a great job with it. That part particularly grabbed me. The whole thing had that kind of tone to it, the creepiness, the subtleness, the under your skin goosebumps, beautifully done. As a matter of fact, I could kind of see this on Goosebumps. Really, really great story.
Thank you, Rack. Or the rat could have been a metaphor for all those rats that are in our lives, taking the shadows.
And Sweetness, comment on Miss Kai, and then it's your turn.
Well, first off, I love that you said dark sky. I think that is brilliant, FYI. And I love the music behind the sky. But as always, I love the way you start things out and the reaching, and the reaching. I love that. And like button-down collared shirts, the e-folding, folding, yellowy. So I loved all that kind of hollowness that you're going through it. Like, you know, you just hear that echo. And that drives me nuts when I can hear an echo, like somebody's behind you talking every word you say, and there's that whisper in the back of your head. So that gave me the absolute chills. So brilliantly done, young Maggie. Brilliantly done.
Thank you, Sweet.
And you are up on the board, Sweet.
All right.
Did you see AP's note in the room?
I did.
Okay.
I responded.
Oh, okay, sorry, I didn't see that one. Sorry. Just tell me to shut up. Sorry, Sweet Pea.
That's all right. Hush, hush, baby, we gotcha. This is Treasure Match by Sweet Pea. Fragrant smells of yesterday's defecated dinner linger on piss-stained yellow sheets as the residents of Rolling Hills awake for morning coffee and a regurgitated food called breakfast. Night shift nurses yawn and communicate stats and complaints as day nurses gossip and pretend to care. And from his bed, Mr. Treasure smiles as his 96th year begins. Christian Cliff Withers III was his proper name, but he was known simply as Treasures to the staff, a given nickname based on the stories of his past. Pearl, the sandy blonde nurse with green eyes, sat in awe as he mumbled about the X's on his maps. Karen loved the story of the ballerina in a jewelry box. Mike, the night nurse, held his hand as he cried, begging to have Treasure surround him again. Mike was a strong man. He could dig them up for him. The coffer stuffed with a cornucopia of circus toys. A golden flower deposited among the aspens in Colorado. The Spanish beauty he fought for in Mexico City. Mr. Treasure and his talk of naps, his X's and O's. His flowers and gold jewelry, the jewels he buried in the Great Lakes from Michigan to Ontario. Kirsten Kurt Withers, the third old house went up in flames 26 days after his 96th birthday. Scorched walls relieved a treasure map carved into a wall. A treasure did exist. Across the nation he traveled, all handled with care, finished and polished by the tools of his trade, pinchers, hammers, pritchel, tongs, horseshoes, a fairy, dismembered 17 boys and girls, and poems.
That's my Queen of Darkness with a sacrificial children, 72 kids. I think you've outdone yourself. But how wonderful is this? Okay, first of all, I had to stop from giggling at yesterday's defecated dinner and piss-stained yellow sheets, and you know, because you just started right in off the back with all that odoriferous fabulousness. And so we're going through with this old man and all of his amazing tales of this life well lived, and well. Apparently he was very good at his job, because wow, across the nation 72 and nobody, you know, none the wiser. So that is awesome. I absolutely love this. I am so excited that you wrote for me. I'm so excited. So AT, what are your thoughts of all of these dead children?
Well, I'm just wondering if they choose on them as well. You know, if you've carved them all up, do you just put shoes on them to finish? But I just sort of wonder about that. But, I mean, putting that to my side, the introduction was really cute. I thought it sort of really set the scene really well for that lovely Greek role, final paragraph. That got me thinking about shoes, apart from being carved up beforehand. So, no, I right down, you know, sweet spot, so to speak.
Sweet spot. That is awesome. I absolutely love that. And Rack, what are your thoughts on this Queen of Darkness's latest piece?
Yeah, the opening really grabbed me too. When I got into my car accident, I had to stay in a rehab facility, and it totally made me think of what the place was like with that description. That the reality is creepier than fantasy any day. I mean, there's no exaggeration in what she said. There's none. No. That's not nonfiction. Thank you, sweetie.
You're welcome.
And Lady A, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was fantastic. I think that you're always had a kind of a creepy side to your writing that you liked, and I loved how you describe everything. I think it's like, especially the first line, the fragrant smells of yesterday's defecated dinner linger. I mean, you could smell it, and on you go, the regurgitated food called breakfast. everything you could see it, and so it was very visual and very, I won't even say the imagery was great. It just, the whole thing was real. You felt like you were in the middle of this horror story, and I just think you really you did a great job with it. Mike, the night nurse, held his hand as he cried, begging to have a treasure surround him again. Mike was a strong man; he could dig them up for him. Oh, yay! Like everything, you know, you everything you've done here. Just, and I liked how you described the Great Lakes from the Great Lake from Michigan to Ontario, tying two countries together. But it was an amazing piece of darkness, and I don't know how you think of these things, all of you really. I like the let me see, have the last couplet of the last verse too. Pinchers, hammers, pritchels, tongs, horseshoes, a farrier dismembered, 72 boys and girls. Wow, wow. Yeah, that was creepy, all right.
Absolutely. Which is awesome. And Miss Sky, so what do you think of all of the sights and scents that we brought us tonight?
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that freaks me out, this reality psychopath piece. You know, I'm, first of all, kudos to you to be able to finish this piece with me texting you in 5 minutes, so definitely well done. And, you know, the detail in this is what really makes it, because there is a, you know, I read a lot. I don't tend to read too many serial killer type books, but I have read quite a bit of Karen Slaughter. And I think that maybe the girls he adored by somebody, I can't remember, Jonathan Nassau, I think. And they were really like psychopath books. Even want to go into the bathroom because of the scenes, and that's the kind of stuff that just really, really kills me, and this is it right here, this idea of a real story, a real man, and the way that you write it isn't just like a brief synopsis, it's like the details, the names, especially the names and the storytelling, I think that brings a reality to it, like something that could have really happened. And I really like the part where you brought in the ballerina jewelry box, because I love jewelry boxes, but have you ever heard of like those creepy jewelry box sounds? That's what I think is when you're reading this, is this in the background, that creepy jewelry box playing. And I thought this was wonderful. The details, I have to say, made it for me, because it made it more real, which to me is very, very scary, because true crime is or fictional crime that's written as if it were true crime is like the top of the cream of the top for me for the scary. So really, really well done, and great piece of fiction, I hope.
Thank you very much. Well, me too.
Awesomeness.
Thank you.
And AP is up on the board, so whenever you're ready, AP.
There's not a lot of humor in this one, Pretty Bird, and it's just slightly dark. This is Madrigals, and it goes a little bit like this. Storks twice their height point uphill diamond stars glinting upon the crops. Orange spray of embers as fireflies chase kerosene lanterns. Supervisors with leather whips, fangs hissing poison. Lashes rebound, scores wet skin. In checkerboard lines, seniors and children, hands bleeding. Rusted sickles catch, weigh heavily as slash against knitting skins. They are thick with sugar. Glow, ebon stone line, wedding as gold run. A scarlet sun sets upon the smoke, roar and flurry. The battle of attrition to take the grisly fingers. The grind of cutting, sweat drips off backs, the skin stretched tight on skeletal bony frames. Eyes, ivory yellow, red flecks, marred by fitful sleep. A muddy river of slaves fall, a treacle of bodies, on madrigals, wings oozes, in poem.
Well, just a little dark. You know, you have a way of writing that commands attention, which is a feat because I haven't read or listened to you read anything that hasn't grabbed from the beginning, you know. And when you get down to this beautiful, a scarlet sunsets upon smoke, roar, and flurry. And then you go through, you know, to take the gristly fingers, the grind of cutting, sweat drips off backs as skin stretched tight on skeletal pony frames, eyes, ivory, yellow, red. I mean, you go through these details that each one is like an instant visual, like it's there, it's visceral. It's almost like you can reach out and touch it. It's and yet there is the way you read that. There was a softness to the edge of these words that was almost delicate, you know, which was in lovely contrast to the imagery to the imagery, and worked really, really well together, and it's just fully enthralling. So I'm all excited about it. And Sweet Pea, what are your thoughts on madrigals?
Well, the darkness of the imagery kind of just sucks you in, and it's kind of like a car crash. You don't want to like listen to it or look at it, but you don't want to stop listening. You don't want to stop looking. It's like beautiful tragedy. I mean, rusted sickles catch, weigh heavy as splash against leafy stems. Holy, that is just one line of sickness, but it's so like beautiful in a kind of sick way that I absolutely have fallen in love with that line. So yeah, I really like it.
Thank you, Sweet.
And Raconteur, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. It was thoroughly enjoyable. I enjoy AP's storytelling, the way that he does it. I'm surprised I can't read it backwards.
You can't.
It's improved.
You did a great job with this, though. I enjoyed it, you know. And your darkness is kind of new to me, and I appreciate the way you approach it and you know, your subject matter and word choices. And you just, you know, excellent way of constructing a poem.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
And Miss Sky, what are your thoughts on AP's poem?
AP, I thought this was brilliant, although it did make me made me very sad. But when you, I don't laugh, but it made me very sad in his images. But when you think about the reality of something like this happening, or the reality that this does happen, even through law and through history, there's a very real sense of darkness there in that reality that this is actually happening and just has happened, and the images of the rustless catch weigh heavy as splash against meaty stems, they are thick with sugar, faces glow ebon stone, aligned with set as gold rung. This is absolutely brilliant writing and storytelling. Again, back, you know, when you get into the grind of the cutting, the sweat drips off the back and the skin sketches tight in the skeleton bony frame. There is a hauntingness in the reality in this piece. And though for me it does echo a sadness, there is a very dark and scary point, I guess, of the human condition that could happen, and that in itself is very, very scary when you really think about it. So really, really well done. I thought this was written very, very well.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that this was really creepy for you. I don't think I've ever read anything like this from you or similar to this. The first verse, what caught me with that was that you're talking about the crops and using kerosene lanterns. But then the supervisors with leather whips, this is what really jumped out at me, supervisors with leather whips, fangs hissing poison, lashes rebound, scores wet skin. Now, you could, you know, like, I don't know if anybody caught that or not, but, you know, they're obviously hitting somebody with this whip, and it scores the skin. It just, you can see it flayed open with this whip on that wet skin. That really creeped me out, because that's a very vivid bit of imagery. And then you go on to talk about the hands bleeding of seniors and children, and it just, you know, you could see them using the what do they call the machetes to chop down whatever crops, maybe it's sugar cane, I don't know. But this was really just unbelievable, actually. And you talk about the description of them, and the grisly fingers, the grind of cutting, sweat drips off backs as skin is stretched tight on skeletal bones, bony frames. And you can see the starvation there of these people being kept without being fed, forced to work without being fed properly. And it's just an amazing piece. It just, and then the mandrills. I had to look that up, and it's a type of song, from what I can see.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and you
song.
Can hear that lament of these people as they worked, or the perhaps the slave songs of old. And I just really was very. You're very intelligent, AP, and it shows in all of your writing. And I like lines like I picked out, because if you would just sort of glance over them, you wouldn't really notice, you know, with regard to that, see, that whip that was scoring wet skin. Like, you know, you could kind of think, well, what does he mean by that? It just, you know, to me, I find you have in such intelligent lines in your poetry that jump out at me, and I marvel at them. Anyways, I'm gushing, but it's true. I really like your stuff.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we have Titus on the board, and he's got a sound cloud.
Evening, Pretty Bird. I've got to disappear back to work, so my thanks for letting me on and doing my little sort of slightly grey to sort of a little bit darker piece. Thank you.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Thanks for bringing it, and you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Bye.
Good night. And we have Titus. We have Titus on the board, and if I can find him on my list, I put him here myself, so I know he's here. Here we go. Okay, and here we go.
Medico-dilipists, like a pocket rainbow watch. But how, O Doctor Plague, with his immunity bestowed upon time as one uninvited, the evil stench belonging to so putrid a whispered vague, espouse thee mausoleum with the many who are blighted. From upon the bridge of sighs such warnings do come, lost souls whose hieroglyphics now do countless tamper. Tightrope along a fastidious shoreline, hark. And here Iambiasma would impeach along where contagion scamper. the stony stare of silence. At each end will death bemoan those hunchback wolves. Attend thee with the laden weight. Gomorrah asks it masks what fears adhere to chaperone. Then courage will amass a time, the curse it shall parade. Gargoyles, their bloodshot eyes perceived by surveillance over all that is superstition, embellished spores to assail under the umbrella of Lord Protector. And this conveyance trilogy of overwhelming power, masked they shall prevail. They'll lead the woeful cries like an avalanche cavalcade. Creature comforts taxi the closely guarded secret. Healing arches sporium may under this microscope, leading us instead, surrounding Venice like a necklace, adorn some well-being. In reflection, lights like firecrackers are celebrating silence. Such mayhem would be put to past. Behind us we tell, by the vessels that we pray, our holding on is in defiance. The eyes shall condone to outshine the silence of this hell.
Wow. Okay, so this, first the music was very Omen-esque, so, and the way it swelled in there just kind of carried the story. I love this, and the AN says, several theories exist as to why plague doctors wore the bird-like costume, and one was that the disease was spread by birds, therefore the costume represents the disease or the COVID or the Corvid or whatever, and this is amazing. First of all, I never knew that they was like, I didn't know that they were the doctors that wore these things. Like I'm horrible at cultural history. I really, really am. I would lose that in Jeopardy hands down, but wow. The stony stare of silence at each end will death bemoan those hunchback walls, attend thee with the laden weight. Gomorrah asks, it masks what fears adhere to chaperone. The way Titus words things is there is an elegance to it that is so far above me, and I am good with words, but I am not good with grace. I kind of tend to say it as it is, like as I feel it. And so the way I write is a lot more jagged, a lot more kind of cutting. And so I am in awe of the way he shapes death. The gargoyles, their bloodshot eyes perceived by surveillance, so they are watched and watching. And all these superstitions, all of these things, embellished spores do assail, like it's in the air. I love the way he depicts this. It's in a way that I never could. It is just elevated beyond my ability. And Lady A, what are your thoughts?
Well, I had commented on it the last time that I heard this, and I have other things that I've picked out in it here too. I thought this was brilliant, brilliantly written, and I think his ability to write, I agree with you 100%. He's a class act. He has a terrific knowledge of how to write, I do believe, and an entirely classy. He has and of course that his accent helps to promote that as well. But I think this whole poem, when he talks about the spouse of mausoleum with the many who are blighted by this doctor of plague, and I think it is a old English speak to a modern pandemic that we're experiencing now, and the masks worn back then perhaps made by only the doctors, from what I can understand. But, I mean, we all still have to wear masks to protect ourselves from each other. And I thought that this was a really good way of expressing that. And again, in such a beautiful form and spoken so wonderfully well. I just was, I put it on my list the last time the first time I heard it, and it just still remains one of my favorite poems, I think, because he's just extraordinary.
I fully concur. And Rack and Tour, what are your thoughts on Titus's poem?
Yeah, I enjoy the way that he writes as well. I mean, it's almost like a tapestry where, you know, you can't tug on one thread without unraveling the whole thing. Everything is interwoven together, and his word choices put you in a certain frame of mind. You know, the way he tells a story, you get his perspective, and you know, I guess the challenge for me when I write is trying to convey what I'm trying to say. And, you know, that gets lost sometimes because people will read a metaphor or something, and depending on their mood, they won't catch what it is that you mean. But the way he frames everything together, you know, as long as you follow along piece by piece, it all fits into this big puzzle and falls into place, and you really don't misunderstand. At least I don't think that there's much chance of misunderstanding, misinterpreting what it is he's trying to convey. He does a beautiful job.
Awesomeness. And let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. And I fully concur, by the way. Hello, hello.
Deb.
Hello.
How
Hi, Deb.
Are you? We have had quite a night so far. We started off with Hatter bringing Grandma chopping people a bit. It was awesome. So I am loving the darkness. People just came out and are bringing it hard, which is just fabulous.
Awesome.
And yeah, I know, right? So we just listened to Titus. Were you able to hear it or no?
I wasn't actually. I just this second looked at it, but I do recognize it. And I'll just read the comment that I wrote. It says, "Oh my goodness, Tony, this is so great. The details, the imagery, the scariness of gargoyles with bloodshot eyes, the bridge of sighs. Wow." Very impressive use of the word bank, which, now think about that, of the word bank. He's one of the best word bank writers on the site, and this is a perfect example of why.
Yeah, I fully concur. It doesn't even remotely sound like there was, like he had to try. It's just like this seamless transition of words and fabulousness.
Yeah, and I love the photo that he wrote it to. I love the approach he took. I mean, all the way around, it was like, wow.
Okay. And while we are at the halfway point, let's go ahead and say what's coming up. So, Deb, you are up first.
Well, tomorrow is Personal Prompt Monday, but it also just happens to be Hatter's birthday.
Ooh.
So, yes. So what I did was I turned around and I took five of his poems and pulled some quotes from there. You can either check out one of the poems and use that as a prompt, or you can use one of the lines that I pulled out and grab that as a prompt, and then take whichever of those tickled your fancy and combine it with this one photo that I put on the board, because Hatter likes when everybody writes to one picture because he gets a kick out of the amount of variety that comes out of one photo, which is why there's no other photos on my show, which is usually loaded with them. So, and then right below that, there is also a word bank that's made from a bunch of, or actually made from the poems that are in this. So it's all, you know, it's not really a birthday party, but all the prompts are tied to Hatter.
Love that. And Rack and Tour,
Tuesday next week, only 2 days. What's the weirdest thing you put in your mouth? It's, you know, I want food that gets in my mouth going. So, you know, nobody seems to be that interested in it, but we'll see what happens.
Don't sweat it. A lot of us don't get to write for a show until the same day of the show. Just saying.
Yeah.
This is true because, you know, life tends to squeeze us out. Time is not necessarily friendly. And I'm having trouble with with converting a YouTube file, and I don't know what's going on. They're all of my little converters are not working for me. Can you convert something for me, Deb?
I can do it.
Absolutely.
Okay, give me a second. If I can find the link on the board, because I saved it, and I'll be working on that while we listen to Bud, who is on the board, and I'm going.
One note,
yes?
Though, before I forget to tell you, if that happens to you again, if you literally click on that YouTube and pick up the current URL, sometimes that's all it takes. Just saying. They change them sometimes. That's why you, instead of just picking up the URL, you pick up the one that says most current URL, which is what I'm about to do once you send it to me.
Give me 1 second.
Sometimes there's actually a download link in YouTube as well.
I haven't come across those. I mean, I got the rest of them up just fine-ish. I had to go through a couple of them. But so everything else is in there. But this one is a new edition, and I'm all excited about it. But let's go ahead and play Bud. He is on the board with the visit. I'm all excited. And here we go.
The Visit by Budo. The smell of musty breaths and dusty corridors weigh heavy on the senses as the oak floorboards groan from the thousands of steps over centuries of habitation by loving families who cared for the house during its prime. Now abandoned, a derelict vessel adrift, set in a morass of a Sargasso sea of chaotic calm, where the elements have slowly weathered away the foundations of its greatness, leaving only a facade of what was. An eerie glow of moonlight peeks through large Victorian windows laced with dust and grime due to neglect and age. Somewhere in history, it became possessed by evil and its cohorts, draining the light and creeping pitch with insanity's embrace. Whispers can be heard in drafty, darkened halls, reinforcing the validation of the terrors afflicted in secret enclaves where victims' pleas for mercy fell on deaf ears. A shudder of cold, damp fear becomes evident, while unseen eyes peer with malevolence, waiting patiently to wreak havoc on the unsuspecting. Not able to withstand the abomination that fortifies this vessel of the damned, I quickly escape out into the dead of night, breathing in fresh chilled air and scurry to the safety of my vehicle, ignoring the hairs standing straight up on the back of my neck and the cold sweat beating my forehead. I make sure to turn not around for fear of seeing that which should not be seen. A last-minute shriek pierces unnerving tension and curdles the blood. I need to move faster. I am gone. End of poem.
Well, that's not the sweetness of Bud. What was that? That was awesome. First of all, he got all the smell of musty breath.
Right.
And I was just like, uh-oh, all right. And so I'm sitting here completely enthralled, and he's got that tone, and he's talking about, where is it, with the with the Victorian window laced with dust and grime due to neglect and age. Somewhere in history, it became zest. You know what? I know a little something about haunted houses. So this is crazy to me. And I love that because, you know, energy lingers. Things linger. And it's not just things that you're tied to. Like, you know, I have my mother's shawl. I hijacked my mother's shawl. Like, she was still alive when I hijacked it. But I said, I love this. And she's like, I know. I was like, I'm taking it. She's like, I figured. And she loved that thing. But I absolutely took it. And so it not only just smells like her, it feels like her. And part of that is because I know where it came from, but everything kind of has a feeling. That's why I have a problem with antiques. Like, I have to, first of all, they have to not feel weird. And second of all, I have to, like, do spiritual cleansing to things because I'm that girl. And then it'll be okay. But until then, nobody touches it. Nobody sits on it. Nobody knows anything. Mama's going to do some stuff. So I get haunted houses. So I loved this story. And I love, you know, Bud's been kind of branching out a little bit. And maybe he always has, but I never noticed because sometimes I miss things. You know, I'm used to romantic Bud and sweet Bud and kind Bud and we've had this wonderful storytelling in his trilogy for sweet and just darkness and you know, this is not romantic Bud, but this is awesomeness. So I am so thrilled that he brought it. And what do you think, Deborah Lee?
Well, okay. For starters, aside from the brilliance of the poem and the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, we've all heard him sing all these songs, you know, showing all that sweetness and romance and whatnot that you were just mentioning, and he does an amazing job singing and writing music, but this is the first time I've ever heard him do, like, this dramatic read, and I was like, wow. On top of how great that was, I just got to hear, and I think it was the first time that I've heard him where he wasn't singing, because, you know, you put in a little bit of a softer tone in your voice and whatnot when you're singing, as opposed to when you're reading some deep, dark story poem that you bring to life, and it was such an amazing treat to get to hear him read that. I'm very excited about that, and I see it's a gold-winning poem, which is not hard to picture at all. So what a nice treat.
Right? And Raconteur, what are your thoughts on Bud's haunted house?
Oh, man, I love the details in it. And the idea, like you mentioned, that energy doesn't go away. It only changes form. You know, that kind of carries through the thought of this. But the amount of detail, he gave me everything that I could. You know, my mind, I have a crazy head. Sometimes I'll hear something and it'll make me think something stupid, like, you know, what about this or where did that? And he didn't leave anything out, you know, that there's nothing that you know, distracted me. He kept my attention and he kept the story going beautifully.
Awesomeness. I absolutely concur. And Lady A, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was terrific, too. And the story told and the visuals in it, it was nice to see him outside of his love zone and to be able to create a poem like this that kept you on the edge of your seat. And you just, you know, I love to read a poem that has visuals like this where you can imagine the people, you can imagine the setting, the furniture, and the smell in this old place. It just really, and the fear that's in this piece as well. And I just thought that this was a really wonderful piece that you've written, Budo, and you should probably do more like this because they're very creative and challenging, I think. Well done.
And being that I only got 2 days into what's coming up this week, Lady A, you're up on Wednesday. Tell us all about it.
Well, I put in a night of telling me, just let me just get back, telling me about yourself, I think it was. And
Believer. Imagine Dragon, Believer.
Yeah. Well, just a second now. Hang on a second. Yeah, I put the song Believer, but the prompt was the interpretation of this song and what it means to you. Just do your own thing with regard to the content of this song. And I'll just well, the song speaks for itself. The master of my sea, I was broken from a young age, taking my sulking to the masses, writing my poems for the few. That look at me took to me and shook to me, feeling me. I really like this song and the words in it. So just write what it tells you to do and how it speaks to you in your own words. And we're just going to share it.
That's awesome. And you posted the lyrics there so everybody can read them easily. So that is fabulous. And then on Thursday is Miss Sweet and Sweet Discussions. And it's all about the anagrams. And I am so excited about this show because I'm kind of a word nerd. And, you know, I'm good with it. There is no shame. And so you have to pick 2 poems from the list and make some words from those words and write a poem using them. And so I absolutely love that she was so inspired to do that. And then what's up on Friday, Deb?
Friday's Chickamaxo with AP.
Ooh. Gotta love that.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, you guys are in the think tank with cats and dogs, yes?
That was yesterday.
Oh,
It's stainless steel, wherever that leads you.
There you go. That is awesome. And I have Mr. Raconteur up on the board. So when you guys see him, let me know.
Wrong
you
darkness.
You guys got it?
Got it.
It's fine. I'm good with any darkness. It doesn't have to be creepy. And let's see. Here we go.
Mistaking a drink for a shot by Raconteur. I may not be your cup of tea, but I can still satisfy your thirst. Take a chance. Sneak another glance. First impressions are purportedly the worst. I've been told I look like 6 feet of rough road, making it easy to discern what lies within. Unavoidably vulnerable to your scrutiny, take your time and drink me in. Decide for yourself if I have substance. Don't look away or close your eyes. Everything about me is genuine. Life's too short for games and lies. Comfortable keeping my own company, observing the world as it sails through space, searching for beauty amid madness, spoken in the silence of a gentle embrace. It's all in my imagination. The melody of infectious laughter and lingering fragrance of your hair. It could so easily become real if only we weren't pretending to care. No blinding flash before the thunder crash. Just facial precipitation clouding my sight. Over before it ever began. Disappearing like a thief in the night. Separate or together, results in the same conclusion. Fate has a cruel sense of humor.
and happiness is merely an illusion. End poem.
You know, Rack, you have this way when you tell a story that, you know, you have this full arc. You start with, I may not be your cup of tea, but, you know, sneaking at a glance, first impressions are the worst, you know. And then you go into this kind of hope that they're going to, you know, decide for yourself if I have substance. First of all, that line kills me. Like, there's always something in everything that you write that gets me on a completely different level and always taps in to something really visceral for me. To decide for yourself if I have substance, for that to even be a question, it's heartbreaking to me. And then you go through, it's all my imagination, and then it's just facial precipitation, love that phrase, clouding my sight. And then the conclusion at the very end, that last line that hangs in the air, happiness is merely an illusion. It just has so much weight, and it pulls you to a place, a familiar and uncomfortable place. And that's saying something, because sometimes, you know, we read poetry that is lovely in words, but it you forget it the second you read it, and you don't forget feelings, you know. And so excellent job. And Lady A, what are your thoughts? Are you on mute?
Yes, I am. I put myself on mute because I was eating a popsicle. I thought this was really great. And the whole idea behind this poem is... I don't know. There's always a sneak peek of you in these pieces. It's all in my imagination, the melody of infectious laughter and lingering fragrance of your hair. It could so easily become real if only we weren't pretending to care. You know, there's an element always tugs at my heart anyways when I read your poetry. That's just really sad and comfortable keeping my own company, observing the world as it sails through space, searching for beauty amid madness, spoken in the silence of a gentle embrace. You know, one part of you is saying, yeah, I'm good to go, you know, I'm good by myself, I like my own company. But then there's a spoken in the silence of a gentle embrace. There's that wish, that desire to be loved and held by someone who really felt that way, feels that way towards you. So this whole poem to me was, and it's funny because I wrote one not similar to this, but this, an emotional one versus horror. And so I really liked it, Rack. I thought it was well done, and you know, you pretty much feel like crying, because that's how I feel anyways when I read a lot of your things, and this one in particular.
Thanks, Sandra.
And Deb, what are your thoughts?
I agree with you both. I think that the emotion was oozing off this line after line, metaphor after metaphor, and I don't think anybody mentioned that 6 miles of rough road, and I've used that expression, and some people have taken it, you know, in the wrong way, but in the way that it's listed here, it's like kind of gut-wrenching to think about it, because usually if I say it, it's because somebody hasn't been feeling well, or they're hungover. So the way I took it from here, this person was just saying, you know,
that you just look like crap or something. So it was like there's so many aspects of this that hit harder and harder and until you're done. And then when you close out the last two lines, well, the whole stanza, but the last two lines of that closing stanza is like, oh. And then it reminds me that a trip through your Hurt Locker would be like needing tissues. Really, really powerful poetry.
Absolutely. I tend to stay away from his Hurt Locker because, there aren't enough tissues to help me out there. It's some serious stuff that he just does pain so well. And on the board, we have Miss K, and I have her SoundCloud up. So let me know when y'all are ready. You guys see her?
Uh-huh.
Here we go.
Amongst the Flowers by K. Rose and Gardenia Tea Party. Wallpapers her roots of scarlet chartreuse. Lizard tails stirring the cream. Coffee cakes. Harbors a blush, apples figging upon her branches. As a birdhouse sees, I an elm warns. Voices hold deception. The sugar's full. I heard a haunt. She weeps a silent howl that only the rocking horse hears. Stillness sheds its vulnerability as turquoise rests in her thistled heart. He held the blade. She holds the rib. And poem.
You know, I love the picture that she wrote too. I do. But there are lines in here that are just wow. Voices hold deception. And it's kind of like that phrase, you know how they're lying, their lips are moving, you know? And the sugar is full, like it's like they are just laying it on and all the sweetest flattery. I heard a haunt. Like it lingers in familiar lies of old, whether it's the same person or someone else, it's just, it feels bad. And what wonderful ways to say such things, you know? She weeps in a silent howl that only the rocking horse hears. I'm sure we've all had those moments. Maybe it's just me, but I'm sure we've all had those moments where nobody sees you cry. Where nobody notices, whether you cry in the shower or you wait till everybody's gone or asleep or whatever it is, because sometimes it just needs to be let out before it buries you whole. And that just speaks to me of such an intense pain, you know, and then stillness sheds its vulnerability. What beautiful phrasing. What are your thoughts, Deb?
Well, I this was for one of the contests that I ran, and I was like, her and Stephen both entered this contest, and each one of them blew me away with what they did with these. She took the silver. I mean, it's a brevity, but it was packed. It was like the major skill that she uses in her abstract metaphors usually just mesmerize. And even whether it's a long poem and you have to go back and pull pieces from it or a brevity like this, there's still so much imagery that if you go back and read it again, such as right now, you pick up new things and another meaning from it. So, you know, it's pretty much of an impact in a different way each time you look at it. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Oh, and that's in there. It should be the first link if you hit refresh.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Appreciate it. And Lady A, your thoughts?
Very interesting the way that she wrote this, and I liked how it ended. He held the blade, she holds the rib. It's like the story of Adam and Eve to me in the garden. And the whole thing and how beautiful it was, and then they threw it away. She tells that story well in this. It was an interesting take on that particular story.
Absolutely. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of took it like the Garden of Eden as well, because of all the references to the flowers and gardenias and everything, you know, that spoke garden to me. And then in the end, when she throws rib out there, you know, I could see looking at this and going, wait, where'd the meat come from? It's all flowers. But, you know, if you think of it that way, it makes sense to me. So that's the direction that I took it. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely, and the apples, you know, on the branches and whatnot. So absolutely, I can see that. And Miss Lady A, you are on the board if you're ready to read.
Okay. And I took a different path to write this. When I hear dark, there's different avenues. You can go horror, or you can just go dark emotionally. And so this is called Dark Sorrow. In the basement of my mind lives the world most unkind. Making fun is what they do, poke, prod, with much ado. Seeing other moms with daughters go to lunch and shop for hours, supper invites turned down, never visit, my heart drowns. Sick of being non-existent, being the monster in the closet. Being the bad guy is growing old. My dungeon is very cold. Anger creeps into my brain, corroding memories, love refrain. Caustic, corrosive emotions felt where affection once dwelled. Hours run into days, days into weeks. Obligatory visits makes one shriek. Strangers unable to touch each other. Strangers greet. Dark and sorrow plagues. Anger leads to deepened rage. Living on the darkened edge, distance drives me to the ledge. End poem.
This is heartbreaking. You know, it's when you start this off in the basement of my mind. I kind of love that phrase. Because it's not just on your mind, it's not just overtaking, it's not just overwhelming thoughts, it's like in the bowels of thought, in the lowest, darkest, dankest possible place lives the world most unkind. And what a concise and visual way to set a tone, to set a place, a mood. And you can feel the pain and the frustration that comes with that, and the anger and the wishing that it wasn't that way. And it is very palpable, and it is very difficult to process those feelings just as a reader for me, because it is it's an uncomfortable place to be. And it's a familiar place, those that anger, that pain, that distance, that where you get so overwhelmed with it that the only choice is to let it eat you alive or back up, and neither one of those is ideal. So you depicted that very well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. And Raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a sense of torture in this. For some reason, it made me remember, you know, anytime someone would say something when I was younger and it bothered me, I couldn't help sometimes but be impressed by the way that they said it. And that made me even more mad, you know, that they could do it, you know, in such a way that I was like, you know, oh, I could use that, some, you know, that thought. So it's almost like getting beat with your own arm or something like that. It's an ugly feeling, and yeah, it's totally relatable.
The basement of your mind is cool too. You know, you think of the body if it were an apartment or whatever. The head's at the top, but when you the minute you say the basement of your mind, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter where in your body it is. It's at the bottom of that, and that's the darkest, deepest place. Traditionally, is the bottom of something. So yeah, it's totally relatable. Well constructed and emotional.
Very much, I appreciate it. Thank you.
And Dad, did I already ask you for a comment?
No. I think that this one is like heartbreaking, and it drives home some of the things that you've shared over the years as well. Especially the part seeing other moms with daughters go to lunch. I was like, you know, I got this. Feeling in the pit of my stomach. And then I had to try not to cry, and then I realized that it was like, you know, it's just because I care, and I double saved it. Sis, stay the hell away from that frickin' ledge.
I just dangle for a while, you know? But thank
you, everyone.
I
appreciate you sharing that with us. It's not an easy poem to read. I can only imagine how difficult it was to write. And on the board, we have a piece by Mr. Jethro. And let me know when you guys are ready, and I'll press play.
Yeah.
Did I see him? Here we go.
Yeah.
For the... sake of being frightening, I've got one that is fairly, it scared me to death, at least. Now, this is the story, just all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute and just sit right here, and I will tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air. In West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground, is where I spend most of my days. Chilling out, you know, maxing, relaxing, and all cool. On all shooting some bebo outside of school. When a couple of guys who were up to no good, it started making trouble in my neighborhood. And I got in one little fight and my mom got scared. And the movie was your auntie and your uncle in Bel Air. First class, yo, this is bad. Drinking orange juice out of a champagne bottle. Is this what the people of Bel Air live like? This might be alright. Well, wait, I hear they're prissy and all that, you know, and they were, really, I mean, like, just take this guy Carlton, for example. I mean, like, have you ever seen something so completely, like, just, if you had Facebook auto face recognition tags going on, yeah, he would be tagged horror with a, like, capital letters. Like, horror, Will Smith, and the butler. Yeah.
so basically, like, and this isn't, I figured, like, if this is the kind of place, you know, that I should send this cool cat, I don't think I'll even get to see that when I get there, because all I'll be doing is trying to figure out how to get rid of Carlton, you know?
Well, thanks for the earworm, Jethro, because now I'm going to be all, you know. That's the line. Shooting some people outside of the school. And, yeah, I'm going to be all up in it. And that's funny. And that is obviously from The Prince of Bel-Air with Will Smith and what's his name, Robert? I can't even remember his name. Who played Carlton?
DJ,
I don't care, drive me nuts.
DJ Jeff.
Yeah, but I was talking about the TV show. And I am horrible with names, but that was circa 1990, and that was hysterical. And so a little parody of that there for us. So I appreciate it. Horror by satire. He can kill it. That's so funny. That cracked me up. I was not expecting that. And now, seriously, songs can be stuck in my head. So that was wonderfully entertaining. I appreciate it. And I don't know about that at all, but seriously, songs can be stuck in my head now. I'm telling you. I'm going to be trying to sleep, and that'll keep me up at night, that's for sure. So there's that. Woohoo! So horror it is. And I'm hoping you guys found that as entertaining as I did. And so, Rack, what are your thoughts on the parody?
Yeah, I could have thought of a worse song to be a horror, but I enjoyed the thought anyway. You know, if you take it for granted that, you know, that's a frightening song, then okay. The idea was pretty cool. Definitely a wonderful performance piece. The asides, and I always like when, you know, quote unquote breaking the fourth wall, and you start talking to the audience, and you're not in the mode of the song anymore, and things like that. It was really, really a cool way to go. You know, I don't know about twisting it into something, or I should say submitting it for Darkness, considering the person that was supposed to be singing the song. So, you know, that could be taken to HR for a different reason, but I won't go into that. I liked it though. I really did.
And Lady A, how did you like this entertaining piece?
Well, it was very unique.
That it was, and unexpected. You know, every night is an adventure. You never know what's going to happen. And I kind of love that, because if everything was the same all the time, why bother tuning in to the same old, same old, same old, same old? So definitely, definitely not the same old thing. So I much appreciate it. And so thank you for that. Again, with the earworm, that's going to drive me nuts. I'm probably going to have to sing the whole song before I go to bed. Otherwise, I won't get rid of it. So thanks.
Uh-huh.
And so on the board now, we have R.S. Morris, and he has a SoundCloud. So let me know when you guys see him. You guys got him up?
Tonight?
Huh? No, it's like I put them on the board. So, do you see them?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Tonight.
Oh yes. You okay, Rack?
I'm trying. I'm hanging in.
Okay. Here we go.
This happens once a year, the date always unknown. There is a haunting in our woods where the trees are overgrown. is that chill in the air. Nowhere is there moonlight. No stars are in the sky. There is a haunting tonight. It is summer outside, but the leaves have turned brown. Birds are no longer singing. Deer and squirrels are not around. There is a haunting tonight. Lights form a square in the trees. A piano plays a grand sonata. Violin moans in a sullen breeze. Whispering comes from the hill. Couple slow dances all aglow. Warm outside, but the air is chilled. Piano switches to a slow rondo. There is a haunting tonight. No one would believe us anyway. We just hunker down and watch this surreal, supernatural display. Morning is now approaching. Leaves are green, birds sing bright. Deer and squirrels prance about. There was a haunting last night.
You know, I kind of love this. The AN on this poem says, took a pic of our woods and these four lights showed up in the trees. So this was an actual experience, and love his voice, love his voice, love his voice, love his voice. It happens once a year and the date is always unknown. So this isn't the first time. Sure, it won't be the last time, but they showed up like a square. Everything is quiet when they're there, and it's I don't know, aliens, ghosts, whatever he's whatever is haunting this. And whispering comes from the hill, and it's just, there's a, it feels like a normal bedtime story to hear him just talk about it, you know, and then when you read that it's a thing, that it happens, and it happens once a year, it really adds an eeriness to it. That's like, oh my, because, you know, and then the sun comes up and it never was, you know, and no one will believe us, you know, so I just go around telling everybody. And I really kind of dug that. There's always something surreal about things that have even experiences that have that are true, that have any modicum of reality despite the differences in perception. So this really is quite a thing. I'm impressed, and I am a little bit in awe. So what are your thoughts, Lady A?
I find him mesmerizing anyway because I like his voice.
Right.
And I got to get back to the page, Hank. Okay. He has I'm going to say I like his voice, and I like the repetition, there is a haunting tonight. No one would believe us anyway. We just hunker down and watch the surreal supernatural display. I just think it was haunting. It was mesmerizing. And when you get out in the woods and there's a full moon, you know you're going to get haunted, and you're going to get scared. And it talks about the creatures and the, I mean, you just have to walk beside the woods and you feel that way because your imagination begins.
Dude, I can't
to
walk
roll
beside the woods because I hear that from Friday the 13th. Me and woods don't do well at night.
Yeah, I just there's just a real creepiness about just doing that exactly, but he talks about it in such a calm fashion in that southern drawl of his, and it's like this reminded me, you know, those campfire stories where you know, the two lovers are trapped in their car and you know, they're locked inside their car, but then there's that hand that comes in the window or the face. That's what kind of reminds me of one of those kinds of things.
That's awesome. See, eerie. That's awesome. And Rackentor, what do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed that he wrote this in the present tense. First person, because you know, then by reading it that way, you can't help but be drawn in. So it added to the depth of the story for me. The whole idea of it happening could be dismissed, but because he's saying, you know, it's kind of happens once a year, that is what made it creepy. You know, it's like if it happened once, oh, you know, it was, you know, the reflection of the light off of an owl's eyes or something like that, you know. But, you know, the same thing happening again next year, and, you know, you can't predict the date, and it happens again, you know. And then you almost picture him, like, you know, going out wondering, is it going to happen again tonight, you know, and setting it in the woods the way that he did. It was all elegant storytelling. He did a fantastic job with this.
He absolutely did. Oh, so we have three more poems and not a whole lot of time, but we'll get them in before we go. And Wolf Spirit is on the board and he needs a reader. Lady A, would you mind? It says shit. It's okay to say shit. I told him it's okay to say shit because we're PG-13 and sometimes shit happens.
Okay.
Well, okay.
So this is the poem called The Old Laughing Lady by Wolf Spirit. I am still not certain if it was a dream or if it was real, but it was terrifying and potent. In bed with my wife last night, with our cat snuggled up between us, and I awake to a sound like a scratching on glass. I sat up and looked toward the window, and the shade was coming slowly down. Oh, but wait, we don't have a shade on that window, and our window isn't that large either. And there was a strange glow coming from the only chair in the room, but it was a bar stool, not a chair. But it's now a chair, and a withered old lady is leering at me as she slowly turns her head sideways and ever larger until her mouth is as large as a pumpkin. And that grin and those piercing, colorless eyes. I tried to yell and it was was stifled. I tried to move and was frozen. I finally screamed, "That woman in the chair!" And the next thing I knew, my wife was holding me and saying, "Are you okay, baby? You were mumbling and kicking your legs." I hugged her. "Holy shit, darling. That was all too real. I could still feel the presence in the room." Our bedroom was normal again, and we drifted off to sleep in each other's arms. But it was a fitful sleep. And poem.
Well, you read it. What do you think, Lady A?
Well, it was, you know, it was pretty creepy because I haven't had one in a long, long time, but have been my whole life prone to night terrors. So this is the kind of dream that I would have, something crazy like that, you know, like that old lady leering at you that, it just, and then he seems to float closer to you to strangle you or something. I thought it was really a good interpretation of a night terror dream. And I thought the whole thing was, but it's very frightening when you do dream with stuff like that. I don't know if you guys have nightmares in your adult lives now or not, but it's a very frightening thing to experience, and then this part really was, you know, once it was the chair, the bar still went back to being a chair, and a withered old lady was leering at me as slowly she turns her head, and you can see that slow turn, and she's looking at you, and then the and ever larger until her mouth was as large as a pumpkin. Like, that whole thing was a bad acid trip, you know? Like, that was really...
And he did a really good job of making that in real time, and and you can see the head grow and the mouth get huge, and you can feel it. And he did a great job reading it with a growing tension, and so yeah, I think he did a great job with that. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, he did a great job of telling a story. That turned out to be a dream, or did it, or was it, you know, one of those, you know, I like, something that could be explained away, by, you know, oh, it was only a dream or something simple like that. But, you know, was it, you know, that lingering thought that hangs behind it, that, you know, who's right, you know, where does the truth lie kind of an idea, is always adds to the story for me. And this had all the elements of that, you know, the room shifting, you know, you would question that unless he said it was a dream, you know. It was like, you know, okay, you know, wait, there's no shade there. Oh, well, what's he trying to, you know, make us believe now? And then, oh, but it's a dream. Oh, well, anything can happen in a dream. It's cool, you know.
And we have one more poem, and it is by Poetic Picasso, and he has a sound cloud. So, and then we will close out the night. And let me find where I put it. Here it is, and here we go.
In the distant world beyond the ward of the wicked queen, whose Stygian silhouettes of shadowy phantoms are seen, the ravens preen themselves above the long rows of the sundry rotten bones of death, the Plutonian dreams of the soulless victims of misty breath. Amidst the sword and soil of the dead are the token traces of the ghastly rose of the past, amongst the haunting rushes that were betrayed and cast, where the gatekeeper of this place of stench is the face of the dreadful willowy fiend, a spirit without a soul, and lost in the Nepenthean waters and swales once screened. The Cimmerian birds gather upon the hoary tombstones, and putrid flesh deartrated, where the ashes of charcoal burn and the prickly thorns of the toxic poison situated, by the stealthy assassins of the midnight hour of dire revenge and ominous fate, and their salvation is forever forsaken to the cries too late. Brazen steps of a collector of bones and skulls galore, amassed in the heap of a thousand broken clavicles and sternums of before. Under the cursed moonlight glow in the visible vestiges of the pools of carmine blood. Behold the skulls of the pagan shrine, standing all within the mud. In the poem.
Well, isn't he theatrical? I wasn't expecting the deep and eerie voice. Excellent word usage as usual. The dead are the token traces of the ghastly rose of the past amongst the haunting wretches that they were betrayed and cast. You know, between that and a brazen steps of the collector of bones and skulls galore, amassed in the heap of the thousand broken clavicles and sternums of before. You gotta love Mountain of Death. when you're talking darkness, I mean that's kind of not a bad way to end the show with a big old mountain of broken bones. So I absolutely appreciate that. And Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I like the detail that he mentioned the clavicles and sternums as well. It kind of keeps the bones up just a little bit higher by hearing that, you know, and being specific about it. It's like, you know, if someone's giving me a poem about bones and they mention something incorrectly, it totally gives my brain, you know, a speed bump. You know, if they're trying to pass it off as cartilage, I'm like, no, that's not bone. But, you know, he actually specifically mentioned bones that, oh, I know what those bones are. So, you know, it helps to visualize the imagery that he's talking about. You know, it's one of those little details that he included in the story that made it more visual for me. Really appreciated that.
And Lady A, your thoughts?
Well, he reminds me so much of the era of Vincent Price and his acting that was, you know, like very. It was in a day where they enunciated all of the words and so correctly and precisely, and he does that. He has a certain quality of theater behind his name anyways, but he really puts himself into the reeds, and I think that's a really terrific way to be, and he has this great talent to, well, he's like an actor. He's an actor when he does his pieces, and I find them very interesting and fun.
Absolutely. Now, me being the a horrible host, Miss Deborah Lee had to run before she had a chance to read. So please read her poem. She asked not to skip it because she isn't here to read the fabulousness, and it's called They Do Say You Are What You Eat. So I'm sure it's amazing. I never read anything before the show because I like to be surprised. So make sure you read it and show love. And I will make it up to her next time as soon as she hops on. But I am bad with timing, let me tell you what. So my apologies, my heartfelt apologies, Miss Beverly. I try to squeeze everybody in, and I missed it. But
we should play it on my show.
That would be awesome. I appreciate that. Thank you. So that way,
what you eat.
That is perfect. That's funny because it's all about food. Oh, look at that. That is awesome. And I appreciate that. And you guys were awesome.
I'll ask her. She doesn't mind.
Yeah. And when she calls so that she can read it because, you know, nobody reads her stuff like she can, which is awesomeness. And I thank you guys for bringing the darkness and sharing the darkness and your thoughts on all the creepy things, because I love, my mind is all twisted in many kinds of ways, and I love the creepiness. And so thank you for coming and sharing it all with me. And I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your evening or rest of your day, since it's 1 a.m. here. And and I will see you guys next time. You guys are amazing. Thank you so, so much for sharing time with me.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Good night, guys.